Welcome to the Impact Equals podcast, in which we explore the impact investment industry, what it is, why it matters, and how it is playing a key role in reshaping how business is undertaken in many parts of the world. My name is Andrew Murray Watson. Today, my guest is Kieran Boyle, the CEO of the Impact Investing Institute. The Institute is an independent, non-profit organisation with a vision of transforming capital markets for a sustainable future, where impact investing is an effective tool for deploying capital. It works with investors and their advisors to move more effective capital for the benefit of people and the planet, and advocates for regulatory and policy environments that support that goal. Kieran, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Morning.
You joined the Institute following 7 years as Chief Executive of Guy's and St Thomas's Foundation in London, and prior to that worked in the Cabinet Office, where I believe you are Director of Impact Investment and the key architect of the UK government strategy to make the UK a global hub for impact investing. It sounds like you've spent a lot of your career pretty close to the corridors of power.
I'm particularly focused on this question of how do we move capital markets towards deeper social and environmental impact as well. So looking forward to this discussion.
Great. And so firstly, how did you get hooked into the impact industry? I mean, what is your kind of guiding North Star, if you like?
Ooh, good question. I mean, if I take it right back. As a kid, I really loved making things with no talent at all. So think kind of cardboard boxes, sellotaped together. But that sort of kind of question of how things fit together has always been of deep interest to me. And so then I spent time working in policy and spent time running a philanthropy. And sort of a moment where Darren Walker of the Ford Foundation, I think, puts it really nicely of what's the biggest input to the problem? There are all these problems in the world. What's the biggest thing you can go at? And it's always going to be multiple things, but what's the single thing you could really go after? And for me, the question has always been that, feels that capital shapes the world around us in all sorts of ways, but it kind of hides in plain sight, particularly for policymakers. I think often there's insufficient attention to how do you harness that? How do you harness capital in support of better outcomes for people, for the planet? So what drives my passion about impact investing is really how are you mobilizing capital markets in ways that benefit us all?
Okay. I mean, I don't see any pom-poms, but essentially you are the cheerleader for the impact investment industry when it comes to talking to capital markets. Is that a fair summary?
I don't know if it is, actually. I'm definitely pro-impact investing and certainly helping capital markets engage in this space. I'm not sure I'd agree with cheerleader, because what really grows a field is not breathless enthusiasm. What we do at the Institute is deal with a bunch of how questions. So maybe not the cheerleader, maybe the dance coordinator. I don't really know very much about cheerleading. But what we're really focused on is very practically, how does capital move? What does it take for capital to move, particularly amongst institutions? So if you think about those big pools of capital that exist in pension funds or insurance funds, sovereign wealth and family offices and endowments, more and more people want to deploy capital for impact. We can kind of go through why, but how do they do it? What does it look like? What does good look like? What does better look like? And that's what we're about.
Okay. So you walk out of Liverpool Street Station, you wander into a nearby glass tower to speak to a large pension fund. What is that conversation?
Look, there are two big trends going on in the world at the moment, I think, that I see is really relevant for impact investing. And the first you might call just a greater appreciation of the impact of investment. So all investments have an impact in the world. That could be a positive one, it could be a negative one. Quite often it's a negative one. If you're a really big investor, a very long-term investor, you basically own a slice of society. It's the concept of universal ownership. You own a slice of society. So how society performs actually impacts upon your underlying investments. Externalities just don't feel so external, particularly when you think about climate, but you can make exactly the same argument about a bunch of other social factors as well. So quite a lot of the discussion is around that. And how are you managing those externalities in your investment? So that would be the impact of investment. And then the other big trend that is going on that you just see all around us is the growth of what you might call purpose-driven businesses, businesses that achieve value through social and environmental outcomes. And the global economy is going through a huge transition over the next 30 years, huge economic opportunities for those companies that are able to harness some of that value. So really, kind of, you go into that big glass building, that's often where the discussion focuses on these trends. And then it moves to, as I was saying, these sort of how questions of, okay, kind of, we get the theory that there are economic opportunities to be had, this systemic and systematic risk to be avoided in how we allocate our capital. But what does that practically mean? How do we go about allocating capital? What does that look like? So give a really practical example of the sort of conversation that we might be having in that environmentally sound glass building, which is we'll talk about things like the just transition. Lots and lots of investors, capital allocators, are being asked by their clients to think in rounded terms about how they make investments, how they think about how the environmental aspects align with the social aspects, align at times with community outcomes as well, and how all of that makes commercial sense. Because if you are a big pension fund, for example, you've got a mandate, you've got a returns mandate that you need to meet. And so we have developed with 20 global financial firms, so the world's biggest asset managers, and an equal number of NGOs and civic society organizations, a very practical framework for what does just transition investing look like? How do you do it? And that tends to be the sort of conversation that we're having at the portfolio and the product level. What does it look like when you, as an institutional investor, are deploying capital for impact? And my own background when working in government was often at the other end of the scale. And particularly when I was running a philanthropy, it was the other end of the scale, which was thinking about the needs of impact enterprises and social entrepreneurs and social enterprises. And so it's been a great interest to me to see how the conversations do connect, not always perfectly, but there is very definitely a growth of institutional impact investing, I would say, as part of a broader impact economy.
Okay. So in broad terms, the institutions you're talking to see this more as an opportunity than a challenge. I mean, I think, you know, we're obviously, you know, every week we have headlines about pushback about against ESG particularly, and a kind of, I guess, a sort of a more general narrative about perhaps large institutions to just focus on making a return for their investors, and, you know, they should be parking all of this other stuff. Is there a greater headwind now when you're having these conversations?
There is, actually. I mean, firstly, impact investment isn't ESG. ESG, I would see as a risk management framework, and an important one at that. Impact investment, I would see much more about the positive allocation of capital. And typically, I think sorts of things that the Institute or BII focus on is the positive allocation of capital to solutions, you know, solutions that the world needs. And you can say that you're doing this all to be on the side of right, but I would also say it's to be on the side of necessary. What are we talking about when we're talking about tackling climate change, when we're tackling social inequality? We're talking about how do you create the conditions for successful growth, successful businesses, successful societies as well. One thing I would note is that a lot of the attention on ESG and on these questions, we should expect, you know, systems change, I guess that's what I've always been interested in. It's not a gentle thing. This is about changing at often quite deep and fundamental levels how we think about what the purpose of markets is, what the purpose of companies and corporates, how we all contribute to those. And so we should expect, you know, political discussion, debate, pushback. And I think that's a positive thing. It shows that it matters. One thing I would feel is that people should take the right things from those. This should mean that we, those of us who are looking at How do you evolve the field of finance to have greater impact? We should sharpen. We should be clearer. This should push us towards being more robust. It shouldn't put us off.
You mentioned just transition, and I think we hear that term a great deal about when we're talking about emerging economies particularly. I guess it to a certain extent it applies in developed economies as well, given that, you know, there is certainly louder political voices saying, you know, the man and woman on the street shouldn't be bearing the cost of this. What is the role of kind of impact investors within that kind of wider debate? I mean, you mentioned that there is a systematic change that's happening. Where does that leave, I guess, you know, normal consumers, be it that in South Africa or Nigeria or India or indeed the UK?
Yeah, so it's this. So I think this is a global question. You're entirely right. We do a lot of work at the Institute around the role of just transition investing in emerging and frontier markets for all sorts of reasons that we can get into. But I think it is a global question. And I mean, at its simplest, I think this is just a political question, particularly in developed markets. Mm. For exactly as you say, our economy is going to go through a huge transition, and that will be uncomfortable. There's lots of opportunities in it, but as with most things that change wholeheartedly, there will be a lot of losers as well. And I'm very convinced that unless we think hard about, in developed economies, what's in it for people out of the changes that we're making, that people feel that the changes that we're making towards a greener, lower carbon economy are in their immediate interests, we're just not going to have the political appetite that's needed. So even if you only cared about the climate element of things, I think you ought to focus on these aspects in the round of the environmental, the social, and the community perspective. What's really interesting, I think, is when you hear the discussion in a lot of developed and emerging markets, it's almost the other way around, isn't it? It's a question of there are huge societal needs. How do we do those in a way that's consistent and aligned with what the planet needs in terms of reduced carbon? It converges in a similar space, but comes at it from different angles. My concern about this is that it can also sound, though, a little bit conceptual. And I find it personally easier to talk in kind of really practical terms about investments in renewable energy when thinking about, well, okay, for those investments in renewable energy, what are the quality of jobs going to be for the people working in that renewable energy plant? And how affordable is the energy going to be for communities based close to it? That, I think, is kind of thinking in holistic, aligned terms, really about what the economy needs. And that's as relevant in, I would say, in developed economies as it is in emerging and frontier markets.
Is that how you sell it, essentially? Is that the you root it in a practical narrative?
I think all of this is best understood through the practical. So I've a lot of experience in trying to move systems, and I think we ought to be careful about having too much telling people what they should do. I think showing people what they can do and how they do it needs to have as much attention. So I think rooting things in the practical is really important.
Now, looking at the impact investment industry as a whole, clearly it's grown exponentially over the last decade. It's worth over $1 trillion now. Do you see that growth continuing? I mean, you speak to institutional investors every day who are, I imagine, moving funds or moving capital into funds and vehicles that have an impact label. Is that growth going to continue, and is the meaning of impact going to change as a result?
Is that growth going to continue? Yes, I think so. I think this is structural for the reasons that we set out. Will it be linear? I doubt it. Most things don't tend to be. They tend to go forward a bit, back a bit, and then reach some form of tipping point where it gets pretty exponential. that's what I expect to happen around impact, particularly as a lens for institutional investors. Will it change the concept of impact? I don't know. You can spend a bit of time with that one. Capital isn't monolithic, and different pools of capital have their own mandates and what they're able to do. So they might be able to partner with different types of impact and different types of impact approach. So does that change the underlying core of what impact is? No, but I don't know if we should expect a sort of kind of homogeneity of what impact investing looks like. And I can talk about my experience when I was managing Guy's and St. Thomas's Foundation. We had £1 billion endowment, and we moved that £4 billion into a focus on impact. But there were a number of different impact strategies within that, some much, much more focused on specific issues, on the power of blending capital, risk bearing, some looking at impact at scale, perhaps not having the same depth, but having a much wider reach as well. We may get more familiar with describing, at the moment, I think that all sits under the bucket of impact, but we may get kind of more familiar with describing these in varied ways.
Is there a danger, therefore, that the meaning of impact gets diluted in some way, in the same way that, you know, that we see a lot of companies and funds now being accused of greenwashing? Is the rush into impact, is there a danger that might be tarnished with the same sort of a brush?
Yeah, potentially. Potentially, we need to be careful about that. I wouldn't say it's unique to impact, but yeah, we need integrity with this. But that's why I think that's why I have confidence in some of the kind of structural elements of this. Because when I think about impact investing, I think about intentionality. I think about people describing the change that they'd like to see in the world, measuring it, importantly managing for it. And I think these are some of the ways in which this becomes more than a marketing label of what was already happening and going on. But we shouldn't be too sniffy about the fact that people do want to market this, because that itself is a good signal. It shows that consumers want this, that talent wants it, that governments are regulating about it. So we just need to make sure that there's substance behind it. That I would definitely agree with.
Obviously, you sit in the UK. I mean, you had, a decade ago, you were given the task of making the UK the global centre for impact investing. Is it?
It's one of them, yeah. And I think one of the leading ones too, in particular ways. We do have real engagement from institutional capital around impact. We've got a very developed professional services industry around it, a sort of kind of capital markets ecosystem focused on impact, with a particular set of expertise that exists around investing in developed and emerging markets as well. And then we have at the other end of the spectrum a deep tradition of investments in social businesses, in social enterprises. We have institutions like Big Society Capital and others. That's a social investment wholesaler as well. So definitely a leading hub. Why don't I want to say the global hub? Because if we're talking about systems, then it's not in one place. In fact, it would be a deep disappointment if this were only in one place. How are you harnessing what exists in different jurisdictions, I think, is really important. So, for example, it's very exciting that in places like Singapore, there's a deep attention to the huge wealth transition that's going on between generations at the moment, and how more of that can be directed from family offices towards impact. In parts of the US, there's a deep focus on impact venture capital and these high growth potential businesses that will be unicorns, not just in their kind of market valuation, but in social unicorns in terms of the numbers of people that they're reaching. These are all very positive things, but the UK does have a key part, I think, both historically and going ahead in continuing to drive this.
I mean, I want to come back to the question of net zero and just transition. I mean, the numbers that get bandied around in terms of the amount of capital that is required for the world to hit these targets are astronomical, almost, you know, unimaginably huge. Where does the impact investment industry sit in providing a solution to reaching those numbers?
Definitely going to be part of the solution, and I think a pretty practical one at that. So let's use some of these numbers, because I think they are astronomical. So Rockefeller Foundation thinks we need probably around 4 trillion heading towards climate change each year to leave the change that we need, anywhere between kind of 3 and 4 trillion. Just extraordinary numbers. Except when you think that there's 100 trillion in the global capital market. So there's plenty of capital there to deploy. The impact investing industry, as you said, is over $1 trillion now and growing too. So I don't think the quantums are factors off. It's about, I would say, it feels to me it's a pace question. Are we going to get there? Yes. Are we going to get there quickly enough? That, I think, is where we need to focus. And that's certainly what we're trying to do in the UK at the Impact Investing Institute, because we really see our mission about transforming capital markets in support of a fairer, a greener, a more resilient economy. And then what we think is needed there is a combination both of embedding the progress that's been made to date, extending quite rapidly where impact investment is having a reach, but also being part of those experimenting to say, well, actually, what are the models that we're going to need in the future to connect much more capital to impact much more quickly?
Just on your last comment, what are the sort of the, are we seeing the development of certain models appearing now? I mean, your guess at the coalface when it comes to identifying these new models that might emerge.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about. And sometimes, I mean, as ever, you know, what's innovative is actually just the spread of what's already known in pockets. And so what do I get excited about? I'm an ex-bureaucrat, ex-management consultant, so I get excited about weird stuff. But I get really excited about models of blended finance, because I spent a long time working in government where broadly there was just not enough money around to tackle the challenges ahead of us. And there are more and more models emerging of how public and private capital partner together. But broadly, the public capital levers in, leverages in private capital with the appropriate governance to really give the scale of firepower needed to tackle issues. I don't know if people get booted off this podcast if they mention AI. I get excited by that for just a really practical question around. I call impact investing is about specifying, it's about measuring, it's about managing outcomes. But what's always been difficult is that what counts isn't always easy to count, especially in emerging developing markets investments at times. And I think that AI will fundamentally change the nature of that equation in all sorts of ways, reducing the cost of impact capture. So there are some great models out there now that kind of make it much easier to get like an end person's view on what's going on, whether, you know, the investment's working for them and their family or not, through to increasing the ease with which you can link inputs and outcomes and impacts and all of those sorts of things that theories of change get very focused on, at times rightly so. And so I think that has the potential to turbocharge quite a lot of impact investing activity, because it's almost that we've had the technology, we just haven't had the hardware to do some of this. And I think that could change quite quickly.
Lastly, we ask all our guests this question, and perhaps AI is one going to be one part of your answer. But if you look at the impact investment industry today, what are the sort of the three most important trends that will be affecting the industry over the short and medium term?
Three most important trends affecting the industry over the short and the medium term. I think we've touched upon them. So one will be, do we keep an alignment between the environmental, the social, and the community, particularly as we get closer to 2030 and all of those climate commitments start to loom ever larger as well, or will we not? I think that's really important for the impact industry. Will we get past some of them, I would call them membrane problems that we have at the moment, which is broadly that there are more and more pools of capital getting engaged and interested in this territory. There are more and more enterprises, businesses, social actors looking to take on the sort of capital that can help them innovate and scale, linking those big pots of capital to the requirements of those enterprises remains difficult. We continue to need new ideas and ingenuity around that. And then the third, perhaps back to the discussion that we had around ESG and some of the kind of the pushbacks against the allocation of capital towards the 30-year picture rather than the three-month picture, is the importance of holding nerve as well. We could, you know, we could have a deep discussion about this, but let's go back to that kind of conversation that we might be having as the Institute in one of those glass buildings outside of Liverpool Street. And ultimately, so you're talking to a pension fund. Their youngest member will be retiring in 2070. So what's the world going to look like by then? And I think that's the thing that we all really need to stay quite focused on, which is how are we building the conditions for long-term success? How are we taking advantage of the huge economic opportunity in climate transition? And how are we making sure that this is done in a fair and inclusive way so that people aren't left behind, but also so that the politics works on everything that we need to do as a planet?
Kieran, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really fascinating hearing your insights into the industry. And to our listeners, thank you very much for tuning in again to the Impact Equals podcast.